The House, please come back to order. Question before the House is, shall Senate concurrent resolution number 4 pass the House? Representative Brown.
Mr. Speaker, I would like to ask some questions of those people who have been on the special committee, and I know there are members who have spoken here on both sides of the various issues involving the contract. Regarding the El Paso contract, and very carefully, Mr. Speaker, being for or against the El Paso contract is a very different thing, in my view, from being for or against the El Paso line, the Trans-Alaska Gas Pipeline, and as I've said before, I think that's true of the other two contracts as well. Mr. Speaker, I voted for the Senate Concurrent Resolution 3, and I intend to vote for Senate Concurrent Resolution number 5. But this one bothers me, and I want to ask some questions about it. The arguments that we've been hearing for several months, some of them advanced originally by legislators proposing a strategy that might work regarding lobbying for the Trans-Alaska Gas Pipeline. The arguments we've been hearing mostly have been that we should approve these contracts, secure these contracts, and then approve them in order to gain, for two reasons, to gain support for the El Paso Trans-Alaska Gas Pipeline in Washington, D.C. by the contracting parties, and secondly, I've heard discussed, in order to gain standing for the contracting parties before the Federal Power Commission. Mr. Speaker, of course, at the present time, neither Southern nor Tenneco has any standing before the Federal Power Commission. They are not parties, legal parties to the proceeding, and there's no reason for them to be. My understanding is, under the rules of the Federal Power Commission, unless we were to approve Senate Concurrent Resolutions 3 and 5, and those contracts were firm with all parties concerned. But, Mr. Speaker, I don't understand how the argument can apply to El Paso, that they hardly need us to approve this contract in order to gain standing before the Federal Power Commission. They're one of the major applicants, one of the major parties. And secondly, they hardly need our urging for them to lobby for their own pipeline. And I'm interested in the arguments, and this is not just done for showbiz purposes. I really want to hear them. I'm interested in the arguments on both sides of this issue. What are the other reasons for approving this resolution if we're in a situation that we're being asked to exchange 25%, admittedly, for what's been alleged to be a relatively good price, according to current knowledge at least, 25% of the royalty gas involved in these contracts to El Paso in order to secure more vigor on their part to lobby for their own gas pipeline, or in order to secure standing, which they already have before the Federal Power Commission. Now, I've heard other arguments mentioned. They have not seemed persuasive to me before, and I'd like to hear them mentioned again, and I'm not asking that this get drawn out. Of course, I'm waiting, like many other members, to hold a committee meeting for other purposes after this session's over. But I'm very concerned about this issue, and I would like to hear the comments on both sides from the members who actually sat on the special committee and on the finance committee.
Representative Chatterton.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I will offer the representative from Fairbanks one possible reason. He is quite correct as far as El Paso is concerned on the federal scene. However, one should recall that part of the All Alaska system is a regasification plant in California, and there's been quite a bit of opposition to that regasification plant in California. To make the total system go, I suspect that the rationale, or at least it is, satisfies me, that in order to encourage California to permit a regasification plant upon their coast is, let's throw them a herring of 25% gas. Thank you.
Representative McKinnon.
Mr. Speaker, that's the theory behind it, but with the switch provision in the contract, it doesn't quite hold up, because all California, the state government of California, has to do is do everything they can to defeat the El Paso route, and then once the switch has been made to Alcan and El Paso, just to recover its losses, goes along, the state of California will get the gas anyway through the Arctic route by displacement, through the Alcan route by displacement. So that as long as we have the switch provision in, that that theory just doesn't hold.
Representative Spaking and Representative Smith.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, a substantial portion of my reply to the request for information by our colleague from Fairbanks was given by Representative Chatterton, but I would like for him to, for Mr. Brown to consider, Mr. Speaker, that El Paso supplies about 55% of California's gas, and that the need to, on the part of El Paso, to increase its credibility in California for that gas regasification plants, a substantial portion of the package that we're talking about in the All-American route. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Representative Smith.
Mr. Speaker, I'm very nervous about this contract, right down to sweaty palms and queasy stomach. I've been wrestling around with it for several weeks. El Paso hasn't shown me the very things that this contract is designed to win over, and that's their political support. I haven't found that they've done much in public relations in this state to win over the state or this legislative body. They've expected our interest to sell themselves. An example of this goes back 5 years ago when I was asked by someone to apply for a job with El Paso and Anchorage. Not one member of that office in Anchorage was an Alaskan. Everyone was from Texas. I went through and polled. I asked them what their plans were for public relations, because this was the department that I was interested in, and they said none. They were giving $10,000 to the Iditarod because that would get them press. And I'm only giving back to you what they told me verbatim. No plans. They didn't care. They had a product, and that's all that mattered. If this is their attitude towards Alaska, what are they going to do with California? Are they going to have the same attitude that if you want the gas, you'll support it, or are they going to actively work for it? That's one of the doubts. Another one is my own self-doubt. I'm not a visionary, and not a very good gambler. I've tried my luck in Reno and Las Vegas and came home. It's hard to look 20 years into the future and know if we're going to be right or wrong, the chance we have to take. I'm still sitting on the fence. I want to believe in the line. I want it to be all Alaskan. I'm having my doubts with the company, not the line, not the idea of it. There's a sign that I've seen around that says, when in doubt, vote no. And the humor in that is that it's an irresponsible way to make a decision. On the other hand, maybe there is some wisdom to it. I do have my doubts, and I'm looking for somebody to convince me, because I sincerely want the All Alaska line. Thank you.
Representative Hayes.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'd like to first respond to my seatmate and his comment regarding the attitude of California towards any lobbying efforts when they would know that with the governor's option to switch, that they could get it from another direction. I think that there's a fallacy to that. I think, first of all, we're talking about support of the California constituency. And you'd have to assume that those people were informed about all the details of this contract. And I think maybe there are some of us, even in this body, who may not be completely aware of everything in the contract and all the details and all the testimony. So I submit that that's not a valid argument, that Alcan would have to run a counter campaign to whatever lobbying effort that El Paso was making to inform the California constituents that they in fact did have another alternative to get gas in the state of California if the All-Alaska line failed. In response to the representative from Fairbanks and her remark about the lack of public relation effort by El Paso, I presume that she's heard of Omar, and I don't know of any greater effort that's ever been made in the state in terms of people and money. And advertising through the media, and this is generally financed by, among other people, El Paso.
Representative Chatterton.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I hope this House took note of the members of the minority when they try immediately to spring to help a young lady. Just to compliment what Representative Hayes said in answer to the young lady from Fairbanks, why, you can put some dollar figures, just minimal, and I know they far exceed it, and I'm positive this is public information, but El Paso for many, many months has donated $10,000 per month to El Paso.
Representative Miles.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I think Representative Brown has put his finger on the real crux of the issue, and that's why El Paso. And I'd like to address that. If we are in support of the All-Alaska Line, I'd like to sort of take the body back to the last legislature when the leadership or members of the leadership hired Rush Moody, who was again serving as our consultant. Subsequent to his leaving as a member of the FPC, Mr. Speaker, several of the remaining commissioners said that it would have a tremendous impact on any decision to be made by the federal government if the owners committed to their guess, not just line construction. I understand that Mr. Moody said that he could recall no decision in his tenure wherein a line was approved prior to commitment of the gas. That, in essence, what he was saying was commitment of the gas, Mr. Speaker, was the most persuasive argument to any decision affecting a line. Now, just recently, Judge Litt came out with his decision, and we've all been quoting facts and figures and who said what and who shot John, but I think Judge Litt said something that was tremendously important to this issue, which is the crux of the matter, why El Paso. He was discussing in subsection C, page 12, the lack of producer sales contracts and talking about various impediments that have come up. And I'd like to read just one brief quote from that, Mr. Speaker. But these impediments pale when compared to those problems caused throughout the entire period of hearing by the failure of those owning the reserves to enter into sales contracts. Let me repeat that. The failure of those owning the reserves to enter into sales contracts, principally the state of Alaska. And that paragraph goes on. This refusal by itself has prevented the expeditious and orderly examination of the sizing of the pipeline, financing, marketability, etc. Mr. Speaker, when these people tell us this, we have to be believers. If we don't make a commitment, if we don't pass this resolution, Mr. Speaker, we are very definitely making a terrible mistake. Thank you, sir.
Representative Freeman.
Mr. Speaker, for the reasons, everybody has their own reason, I suppose, and maybe mine's different and not that significant, but I used to have a card that I kept on my desk here that says nothing is politically right if it's morally wrong. Now, there's people who scoff at that. There's people who say that the idea of a government having a conscience is somehow wrong. They say there's no place for sentiment in the conducting the state's business, and maybe they're right. I don't agree with that. El Paso was the pioneer in the All-Alaska Line concept, and regardless of what some people might say, they have spent a lot of time and effort. And Mr. Speaker, at this time, it offends my sense of common decency and fair play to cut them out of the action, and I just can't vote for it.
Representative Greening.
Mr. Speaker, I don't really believe anyone's suggesting that we commit a $6 billion resource based on sentiment. I have always understood that El Paso's main concern was to make money off the transmission of the gas, and I take them at their word. Now, if a man's swimming in the ocean and he's surrounded by sharks and he wants to get back onto his boat, he's fallen off, his friend doesn't have to say, hey, there's soup and sandwiches on the boat. All you have to do is jump in. I mean, that man's going to be back on the boat. And I think that's where El Paso is. They don't need a soup and sandwich to get on their own boat. I think they're going to back it. I think the proof is in the pudding. What has happened? Or in the soup and sandwich. I don't know. How you... After John Rayner's hawks and rabbits, I had to come up with something. I'll have to concede. It's probably worse. But the point has been, I think the question is well raised. Why are we doing this to secure additional lobbying efforts? We've been told that they've been working at it for a number of years, and then, of course, they've got everyone lined up they can get lined up. And in fact, Omar testified, and it's in the transcripts, that it was assumed fact these contracts had been approved since the Royalty Board acted. Now, that was about 3 months ago. So we can see what effect these last 3 months have had on that. And I think one of the comments that was made about Judge Litt is very telling. Judge Litt, of course, wants us to commit the gas to the line. Of course, he has a different view of which line ought to go. But one of the problems is, once we commit that and the financing arrangements are made, I think we're going to have trouble with our take-back provisions. And I think until we know the future a little bit more clearly, that we ought to look behind what Judge Litt is really saying. That's why he wants a commitment. And at this point, I think that we ought not to rush headlong in and say we're committing 100% of the gas. Now, if 75% of the daily production, the length of time on the contract, isn't a substantial commitment to the El Paso line, then I think we ought to consider some other things, perhaps offering financing at a later time. And now there's a resolution to consider that. Maybe that's the issue. But the efficacy of this particular contract is very doubtful. Now, somebody raised the question of local hire. That could be an objective under the contract. Why not hold out 25% and say, okay, that's part of, we'll make that a carrot for a good local hire provision. And if El Paso, you get the line, you can get some gas, and we'll work on the local hire provision. But we've been so single-mindedly grabbing onto this one objective that we've shoved aside others. Even though the pricing provisions are well written, there are other objectives other than pricing that we could bring in. And I don't see how withholding, if you're not 100% sure or at least substantially sure that these contracts do not have some major risks, then don't commit 100% of the gas.
Representative Meekins.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. In reply to one statement that's been made, that Judge Litt indicated that there's a real failure on our part to enter into sales contracts. Of course, there's a couple ways to look at that. If we approve two of the contracts, we are entering into sales contracts, so it's that problem is taken care of right there. But I think the real point is, what are we trying to get at with these contracts? We're not trying to influence the FPC. That'd be nice, but first of all, there's no time, and secondly, we know what the FPC is going to do. The major point of these contracts is to get political support. And let's be clear about that. It's not to get a national constituency. If anyone who believes that it's to get a national constituency going, I'd like to talk to you about some swampland in Arizona after the session. I think we all know very clearly what it's about. We want those companies to take to task the congressmen and the senators that they have influence over and tell them, vote for El Paso. That's what we want them to do. And if they can do that, and if people here don't have any moral qualms with that, then I think we'd probably benefit in some cases. But let's look at it in regards to El Paso. El Paso, if El Paso has influence over some congressmen or senators, they're going to exert that influence. They're going to do it as much as they can. They probably already have. So why should we send $1 billion worth of gas in a contract to El Paso when we know they're going to do it anyway? Why should we do that? And particularly, why should we do it when we know that we are losing something? We're losing the options of the future. We're losing 20 years worth of changes in FPC regulations and all sorts of other things which may make different considerations. We're losing possible premiums under those circumstances. We're losing the possibility, as Representative Greening said, to put in a good local hire law in a contract with El Paso if they do get the line. We're losing a whole list of options, some of which are just speculative, some of which we can't even think of now, and we're getting nothing. And I think that we have to look at it that way and realize that a $1 billion contract is not something we do every day. We ought to consider that, and we don't do it because of sentiment. We do it on a basis of what's good for the state. And I think we have to turn down the El Paso contract in order to retain 25% in case any of those speculative problems arise. We have our options maximized.
Representative Bradley.
Mr. Speaker, speaking against the resolution, and in support of remarks, Representative Greening and Meekins, it does appear that we're being a little blinded in the single-minded idea of pushing all three. There's nothing wrong with double timing into this, but just a mad charge just doesn't seem to me to be consistent with basically the charge that this House is under, and that's to be, I guess, sort of the bankers of this gas. And the opposition, the loyal opposition, minority members, specifically Representative Hayes, twice cautioned us to look at this as a business deal. At 11:40 a.m. he mentioned business deal. At 11:44 p.m. he mentioned a business deal. And I'm into being a businessman on this, 100%. And regarding commitment of other gas to the line, why the distinguished minority leader brought out so eloquently that existing 7/8 gas owned by corporations, I believe at least one headquartered in the state of California. So it doesn't appear to me to be prudent, based on the vociferous and I think specific testimony of Representative Greening and Meekins, that we would specifically the 20 years, that it would be prudent to sell. No businessman would commit 100% under the conditions that appear possible or reasonable in the next 20 years. Thank you.
Representative Hayes.
Mr. Speaker, to briefly comment on a recent remark made by one of the representatives concerning the validity of selling 25% to El Paso and the effect that it's going to have politically, I think there's been adequate testimony to indicate that if it's valid for Tenneco and Southern to get constituency support and get constituency clout, which does have effect on, if not the FPC, on congressmen and the president. I would submit again that that's certainly what's good for one is good for the other. But I really would like to respond to remarks made by Mr. Greening, since it's becoming obvious that since it may appear to the opponents of El Paso that based on the arguments on this floor that there is some good reason for selling them 25% of the gas in terms of constituency support, that we're now going to try an end run and come up with the concept of that we're selling 100% of our gas. And so that if we can't win the argument that it doesn't make any sense politically, we'll make the argument that it doesn't make any sense in terms of selling the whole farm. And I guess that goes along somewhat with Mr. Brad's comments that the business approach, and that is if you're going to sell what appears to be 100%, maybe you might be aware of what the other potential is. I think that we're getting a feeling here of running scared. We're taking the position that this is all the gas the state has, that there isn't any more. And so therefore, a commitment of 100% of the daily production under these contracts would simply eliminate any possibility in the future of having gas for in-state use if FPC subsequently disallowed it for one reason or another. But as a matter of fact, we do have other gas on the North Slope. And as a matter of fact, I'm sure that we all, although we don't know it, we're aware of at least some projections of various natural gas potential in various other areas of Alaska. I have some statistics here that I'd like to briefly quote. And it goes like this. Total state royalty gas reserves on the North Slope only amounts to 4.3 trillion cubic feet. And this doesn't take into consideration anything that hasn't been discovered. We're talking about projections based on discovery. The Prudhoe Bay unit, the one we're talking about in these contracts, contain 31.7 trillion cubic feet of gas. And since the state's share is 1/8, royalty share, that calculates out to be about 3.9 trillion cubic feet. And as we previously testified earlier today, the state's selling 2/3 or 2.6 trillion under these contracts. And contracts provide for a take back provision upon notice. In the event, this, as I said previously, in the event, according to some of the other testimony, FPC prevented this, why we'd be stuck for 20 years. And we wouldn't be able to get the other 1.3 trillion until either these contracts took out 2.6 or 20 years expired, whichever came first. But information I have is that there are other North Slope fields, such as Kavik, K-A-V-I-K, and Kimmick, K-I-M-I-K, that contain about 2.4 trillion cubic feet. Divide that by 1/8 and you get 3/10 cubic trillion. You get 3/10 trillion cubic feet as a state's royalty share. This share is not sold. It's not included in these contracts. And if you make another calculation, this will amount to about 12% of what we're presently selling under these contracts. I would submit that should adequately cover any immediately foreseeable state use in the event FPC should subsequently deny the takeout provision, and in the event we shouldn't discover any more gas, all of which is highly unlikely. And I'm also informed that this field that contains about 0.3 trillion cubic feet of royalty gas, it would be about 5 or 6 miles from the projected alignment of the El Paso Natural Gas Line.
Representative Carpenter.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I don't want us to go overboard on sentiment either. I don't think that a contract should be approved on that basis, but I want to recall a piece of history. I was working as a journalist about a half dozen years ago when a delegation of Alaskans flew to El Paso to try to talk El Paso into throwing a proposal in the hopper for a Trans-Alaska route. That was when we all feared that the gas was going to go up the Mackenzie Delta, that we had to have an alternative to that. So we drew El Paso into this, and we were very pleased that they entered the scene. And pursuant to that cause for a Trans-Alaska pipeline, they've expended approximately $20 million, about $6 million of which they've expended in the state of Alaska. I think that it's obvious they want to make a buck and that they want gas in their line for their customers. I think that, frankly, I'd almost rather approve this resolution for El Paso taking 25% than I would Southern. El Paso, to me, has a favored position because of the work they've done to accomplish Trans-Alaska route. Now, the question also seems to bypass at every turn the fact that these are good contracts. There's a good price provision. There's a good take-back provision. And we want to find good prospective purchasers for our gas. We have no in-state use for it right now. And El Paso is a good prospective purchaser. I remind this body also that in a resolution passed by the Senate and House last year, that they resolved that all potential producers of North Slope natural gas make no commitment for the sale of the gas where a commitment might be detrimental to the certification of a Trans-Alaska natural gas pipeline, and be it further resolved that the Alaska State Legislature requests that all potential producers of North Slope natural gas make commitments wherever possible in support of a Trans-Alaska natural gas pipeline routing. Until very recently, we've wanted this thing. I can't understand the switch that we're taking right now.
Representative Swanson.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. It's not so very long ago that Congress gave us the right, a special privilege, to use our royalty share to bolster the economy in the state of Alaska. The ink was hardly dry on that contract until our man upstairs chose to use that for a political weapon or a political clout or a political favor back in Washington, thus making us look pretty damn rough, making us look pretty bad in the eyes of many congressmen for something that they gave us to build our economy, to turn right around and use it for a political clout. We should save at least 25% of that gas for use in Alaska. Let's save just a little bit for us. Well, the city of Anchorage has gas, no problem there, but the interior of Alaska has none. And let me remind you that right today, the governor of the state of Alaska is down at a conference somewhere down in the states, pushing like hell for a clean air condition. Let me tell you something what will happen under his his proposal for clean air in Alaska.
Point of order.
Yeah. State your point, Mr. Urien.
I think we're getting a little bit off the topic.
No, we're not.
Mr. Urien, Mr. Swanson has the floor.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'll continue. With the clean air standard, it won't be too long until Yucabeli coal mines or the coal mines on that end of the district will no longer be able to operate. Thus, we will have no alternate for any kind of power generation in the interior of Alaska but oil, which is a damn scarce commodity. And if we're going to save anything for the state of Alaska, we should save at least 25% of this gas. Once we sell that gas, we have just about as much chance as a snowball in hell of ever getting it back. And that, if you haven't read the newspaper, you should have read what happened down to Tesoro just last week. And today, just ask yourself, am I representing the people and the economy of the state of Alaska, or am I going to vote to represent a gas company? Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Representative Chatterton.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I want to commend Representative Bradley for being a businessman. And I want to say that I share his interest in being a businessman, and when I assume that he means a good, honest, moral businessman. Now, Mr. Speaker, this body, just earlier this afternoon, approved the sale of 1.3 billion cubic feet, trillion cubic feet of gas. It approved the daily average take of our royalty gas on the magnitude of 178 million cubic feet per day. That's 50% of the maximum daily throughput that you could take for 7,300 days over a 20-year period in order to deplete the 2.6 trillion cubic feet which the contract calls for. Now, why I refer to Mr. Bradley as a businessman and a moral one is very simply this. We have no option. This body has no option if it believes that it should honor contracts already in existence. Those contracts are our original oil and gas leases. Those leases state very clearly and precisely that we, the state, have two options. We can take all 100% of our royalty gas in kind, or we can take all 100% of our royalty gas in value. And I underline for this body's recognition the word all. We have already sold, by action of this on this floor earlier, 50%. Mr. Speaker, we have no option short of negating an existing contract but to approve the other remaining 50%. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Representative Miles.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I tried to address a couple of comments that were made about 10 minutes ago, and I think the point's still germane. It's terribly unfortunate there are colleagues from my district. Mr. Meekins made a very strong point that we know what the FPC is going to do. Well, that's not true, Mr. Speaker. We don't know. And Mr. Moody, our consultant, when he testified, he made it very clear. He said, he doesn't know what the FPC is going to do. We don't know what the FPC is going to do, nor do we know what the President or Congress is going to do. So I submit that we should have some input into that decision. Mr. Greening's main points in dumping this contract was perhaps, I think he used the word, to hold out a carrot, such as local hire. If there's no adequate local hire in the state of Alaska, Mr. Speaker, that's not El Paso's fault. That's our fault. Mr. Speaker, just to sum up, these contracts have, we're locked into the best price that anybody will get for gas. Liquid situation is taken care of adequately. Take back provisions. All the majority of our consultants speak to that. I've supported the chairman of the special committee on his deliberations. I think he should have taken his time, but Mr. Speaker, now's the time to bite the bullet. We're there. We're at the crossroads. To use Mr. Greening's own metaphor about the soup and sandwiches, if we dump this contract, it's like the man in the boat holding out soup and sandwiches to El Paso, who's swimming in the field of sharks. Thank you, sir.
Representative Brown.
Mr. Speaker, I am in response to the remarks regarding whether we take all of our gas in kind or not, it was my understanding that the only reason we had any gas to sell to these companies because we were taking it in kind and selling it to them. If we were not doing that, then we would tell the people who provided us with the overriding royalty under oil and gas leases to pay us cash rather than taking it in kind. And even if I'm wrong there, and I don't believe that I am, my understanding is that simply because we approve one or two or three contracts tomorrow, today does not preclude us approving another one tomorrow, next week, next month, or 2 years from now. And I don't think that I've misread the law with regard to the oil and gas leases.
Representative Bennett.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. My learned colleagues may have to kind of go along with me. I'm kind of a country boy. I look down here at my button. The button on the red side says that if I want jobs for Canadians and if I want lots of tax base for Canadians, I push the red button. Under my green button over here, it says that if I want jobs for Alaskans, if I want Alaska to have control of their resources, and I want the United States to have all the control of the gas, I push the green button. So after all this mitigation, everything going on, I can only conclude my green button's got to be pushed. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Representative Chatterton.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I would like to respond to the gentleman from Fairbanks. Our contracts, our basic oil and gas leases, say that we can have a choice of taking all, 100%, each day of our royalty gas, either in kind or in value. We have elected so far today to take 50%. Of each day's production in value. Our oil and gas leases say we have to take all of it. Now, what are we going to do with the other 50% if we don't put it in this pipeline? There's no practical way to handle it. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Representative Guy.
I thank you, Mr. Speaker. During the deliberation of these three resolutions, during the Finance Committee meeting on the House side, I had not done any reading. However, these past 2 days, I have done some hurried reading. And in the course of my reading, some testimonial language, I ran across these two paragraphs. And Mr. Speaker, I would like to read the first one. The state's oil and gas leases contain provisions giving the state the right to take its 12.5% royalty share of oil production in kind rather than in cash value at any time. But an obscure Federal Energy Administration rule negates the lease provision. And once the oil starts to flow, bars the state from later taking the oil in kind for resale or its own use without the consent of the producer or any firm which may have contracted to purchase the crude from the purchaser. Now, Mr. Speaker, if this kind of ruling is going to be applicable to these gas contracts, I feel that the state administration has been derelict in the duties to seek the best kinds of gas contracts that it can get, because this sort of testimonial language leaves a doubt in my mind. I'm not sure whether these contracts were handled with the best interest of the state in mind. Now I'll continue on to the other paragraph which I also ran across, Mr. Speaker. Under the Federal Energy Administration regulations, once a contractual relationship has been established between an oil supplier and purchaser, the contract can be terminated only with the consent of the purchaser. Now, what are we getting into with these contracts? We're just locking ourselves in. What alternatives will we have? Thank you.
Representative Meekins.
Mr. Speaker, I just wanted to talk to 2 points. One point, I guess, that regarding the input to the FPC. If we approve Southern and Tenneco, they'll have standing to talk to the FPC, and El Paso, of course, already has it. So we're not gaining anything in these contracts unless you believe that we're going to somehow buy some influence with the FPC. Of course, that I don't think anyone really believes that. So the point is, again, that we're talking about influencing congressmen, and that's why we don't need this approval of this contract.
Representative Miles.
Yes. Mr. Speaker, I'd like to allay some of Representative Guy's fears. At the present time, the FEA does not control the subject of natural gas. There may be a trend toward this, but at the present time, the FEA does not control this. In an opinion given by the Legislative Affairs Agency, goes on, but the key sentences, they do not apply to natural gas or other natural gas liquids.
You ready for the question? The question is, shall Senate Concurrent Resolution Number 4 pass the House? The members may proceed to vote. Has any member failed to vote? Clerk may lock the roll. Does any member wish to change his vote? Clerk may take the roll.
19 yeas, 20 nays, 1 excused.
So Senate Concurrent Resolution Number 4 has failed to pass the House. Representative Miller.
We stand at ease, Mr. Speaker.
House, please stand at ease. House, please come back to order. Representative Miller.
Mr. Speaker, move and ask unanimous consent. This body stand in recess for 10 minutes.
Hearing no objection, House in recess. House, please come back to order.
Mr. Speaker.
Representative Kelly.
Mr. Speaker, just to ensure that it doesn't get lost in the shuffle, I'd like to give notice of reconsideration on my vote on SCR4.
Clerk, please note Representative Kelly's reconsideration on Senate Concurrent Resolution Number 4. Would the clerk please read the next item on the daily calendar?
Senate Concurrent Resolution Number 5 by the Rules Committee by request of the Governor. Approving the disposal to Southern Natural Gas Company of royalty natural gas taken in kind. The Committee on Finance has had Senate Concurrent Resolution 5 under consideration, and the members of the committee reported back with individual recommendations. The report was signed by Mr. Cooper, Chairman, signing DuPass, Freeman, Rode, and Haugen. Having no recommendation, Cooper, Duncan, Guy, and Meekins. Signing Do Not Pass, Schaefer, Swanson, and Greening. I have no amendments on my desk, Mr. Speaker.
Would the clerk please check the display on the board, the bill number? Senate Concurrent Resolution Number 5 is before you in second reading. Question is, shall Senate Concurrent Resolution Number 5 pass the House? The members may proceed to vote. Has any member failed to vote? Clerk may lock the roll. Does any member wish to change his vote? The clerk may take the roll.
24 yeas, 15 nays, 1 excused.
So Senate Concurrent Resolution Number 5 has passed the House. That brings us to the end of the daily calendar and down to unfinished business. Representative Duncan.
Mr. Speaker, I'd like to give notice of reconsideration of my vote on Senate Concurrent Resolution Number 3 and also on Number 5.
Clerk, please note Representative Duncan's notice of reconsideration, Senate Concurrent Resolutions Numbers 3 and 5.
Thank
Is there any unfinished business to come before the House? Special orders. Under special orders, Chair, I'd like to comment on a point raised today on the floor in debate. It's been the policy in the House to allow wide latitude in debate, speaking on subject before the House. And no, I think it'll be continue to be the policy, as far as I'm concerned, when a member has the floor, unless there's a motion objecting to the consideration of the discussion, we'll have to allow the member to have the floor. And I'm sure the members will speak to the point. Representative Urien?
Speaker, it's also been the policy that we, during debate on the floor, that we don't speak about actions in the other body. And normally we've given that same consideration to actions on the third floor. And the speaker, when I raised my, the person during that debate, when I raised my point of order, was speaking about the third floor. I think we would give the same courtesy we give to members of the body.
Representative Miller.
Speaker, not to prolong this debate, but I just point out to the body that there are times, however, when it is necessary and proper to speak about the third floor. I think it probably was proper in today's debate, in as much as we were concerning contracts signed by the principal occupant of the third floor.
Representative Phillips,
Speaker,
under special orders.
No, I just want to brief at ease.
House, please stand at ease.
For tomorrow.
House, please come back to order. We're down under special orders. Are there any more special orders to come before the House? Announcements of committee meetings. Representative Cooper.
Mr. Speaker, the Finance Committee will meet upon adjournment to take up as many of the following as we can. House Bill 215, the daycare supplemental. House Bill 51, relating to veterans loans. House Bill 179, community schools. House Bill 107, Wickersham Courthouse and Eagle. House Bill 151, Rabbit Creek Rifle Range. House Bill 203, Ferry Pay Differential. House Bill 269, Special Appropriation for Nornack Lake in Naknek. House Bill 167, Supplemental Appropriation for Legal Services. House Bill 226, Supplemental Appropriation for Tanker Study.
Representative Brown.
Mr. Speaker, the House Labor Management Committee will meet tomorrow evening, not tomorrow morning, but tomorrow evening at 7 p.m. For a hearing regarding the Department of Highways layoffs of people from the design section and other related matters, with representatives of the Department of Highways, APEA, and APSE in attendance, like other interested members who are not on the committee to attend. We'll also meet Friday morning at 8 o'clock in a special meeting, not considering a bill, but to consider some further problems that have arisen regarding resident hire, which I hope to remember to address under special orders tomorrow. Mr. Speaker, we have some members of the AFN Telecommunications Committee still left over my committee room. They've been meeting all afternoon with representatives of the Governor's Office of Telecommunications. They're about to leave on an airplane, many of them this afternoon. I'd like as many members of the Select Committee as possible to go immediately over to room 207, any other interested members, to meet with them in these last few minutes before they leave.
Representative Gardner.
The Judiciary Committee will not be meeting this afternoon. Also, I'd like to announce a couple other things. We've had a change in schedule. House Bill 137, Civil Penalties for Oil Discharge, will be considered on Friday, and also House Bill 29 on State Chartered Credit Unions. We're going to take up the credit union bill first on Friday. And we will be meeting this evening at 7:30 in the Governor's Conference Room on a proposal from the court system on a court process proposal.
Representative Duncan.
Mr. Speaker, the Budget and Audit Committee will be meeting tomorrow morning at 8 o'clock a.m. in the House Finance Room.
Representative Redd.
Mr. Speaker, Community and Regional Affairs Committee will meet tomorrow morning at 9 o'clock to work on House Bill 232, Municipal Sales Taxes on Intoxicating Liquor.
Representative Osterbach.
Mr. Speaker, Resources won't meet today. We were taking up House Bill 40.
Division on Forestry, creating with the Department of Natural Resources, and we're going to take that up on Monday. We have a bunch of other bills scheduled for tomorrow at 1:15.
Representative McKinnon.
Mr. Speaker, Commerce will meet tomorrow morning at 8, and we'll be holding the first in a series of hearings on the problems of insurance availability and insurance rates in Alaska. And the witness tomorrow will be Mr. Block, who's Director of the Division of Insurance.
Representative Osi.
Hess will meet at 3:45 upon adjournment, take up House Bill 251, Twin Hill High School.
Further announcements, committee meetings? Representative Miller.
Speaker, if there are none, a reminder that the Alaska Carriers will be hosting a reception for us at 4:30, about an hour from now, until 7:30, apparently at the banquet room of the Hilton Hotel. If there's nothing further to come before this body, Mr. Speaker, I'll ask unanimous consent we stand in adjournment until 10 a.m. tomorrow morning.
Hearing no objection, House adjourned.